You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a few minutes, the U.S. makes lots and lots of candy, but there's a wide world of sweet treats out there. Our guest explores the international candy scene and what's available here in the U.S. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Susanna Michaels joins me now. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations. It's your gift of any amount that makes these conversations possible. Listener support is the largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important. Hey, Susanna.
Hey, Rob. So glad to be here with you. And thank you to everyone who gave last hour. The goal this hour is to get 10 gifts, and these goals are set up to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on.
Let's meet this goal. It happens one gift at a time. Let's start with yours right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has such a unique funding model. It's this two-way street that creates a high-quality product that you don't find anywhere else, and this is how it works. You voluntarily contribute, and in turn, you get programs that are accountable only to you.
It's an amazing system. You get programs worth listening to because you step up and support them. Make your contribution for independent news, information, and music right now. Help pay for all the stuff you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And speaking of stuff, we have a beautiful new t-shirt this year. It's printed right here in Wisconsin. It's got bold lettering on it. It's a navy t-shirt, and the lettering says informed, inspired, connected. And so you can show off your Wisconsin Public Radio pride in the programs when you ask for that WPR t-shirt today when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Member drives are a time to celebrate the programs you value on Wisconsin Public Radio. You tune in for the quality you've come to expect, and now we ask you to support your values with a donation.
This winter member drive is your chance to participate in the quality you enjoy, because listener support is the foundation of WPR programs. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, your contact info, how much you want to give, and how you would like to pay.
And that few minutes, your gift supports the stories and programs that keep you connected to Wisconsin and even the world. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When 10 people support WPR programs in the next 50 minutes, we will meet our goal. Wisconsin Public Radio is listener powered. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a big deal.
And you know, the drive team is always trying to make these member drives fun for you. And so that is why we have an exciting drawing right now. Three lucky people will win $250 to spend at their favorite technology store. You can upgrade your electronics. You can try out something new. It all starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you so much. You are automatically entered in this drawing. And if you're not a sustainer yet, sign up now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you already are a sustaining member making those ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support of Wisconsin Public Radio by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we heard from John in Monroe, who says, I love WPR for its fair and reputable information. Thank you so much, John. I would posit that fair and reputable information is specifically because we are listener supported. That's what your support makes possible. So join in with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for interesting conversations each and every day here on the Ideas Network. We count on you to help pay for it all. Make your very important gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, the last time you strolled the candy aisle at your local grocery store, you probably came across a lot of the standard options, your gummies, your Twizzlers, American chocolates of all shapes and sizes. But if you're looking for something new, maybe there's something else out there beyond those ordinary treats. Well, our next guest says there is. It's candy from other countries. Not only can it be very different than American sweets, she says it can be better. We're listening back to a conversation about that, and you can join by emailing ideas@wpr.org. Do you have a favorite candy from another country, or are you here in the States? You're from another country. What is your favorite candy from back home? Can you find it here? Do you stock up when you're traveling abroad? Let us know. Email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Mull is a staff writer at The Atlantic covering health and also writes a column on American consumerism called Material World. I talked to her about her piece on international candy. Here's a listen. What got you started down this road of international candies?
Well, next to where I go to the gym every week, there is a sort of a crunchy, hippie health food store type place that sometimes I go in and buy a coconut water. And I was at the checkout one day and sort of perusing, you know, even crunchy, hippie health food stores have candy at the checkout. And I was sort of looking at what was available and what might be interesting. And I chose a bag of strawberry licorice because I hadn't had any in a while. And I've always been a fan of like Twizzlers at the movie theater, something like that. So I took it home that night. I sort of opened it and idly, you know, threw a couple pieces in my mouth. And I realized that, wow, it was just fantastic. It was so, so good. I didn't really expect it to be that functionally different from any other strawberry licorice I'd ever had. So I flipped it over to like look. What I had acquired accidentally, and I realized it was from Finland, that it had like a very short ingredient list, and the brand had been around for like 100 years. So I got very, very curious about Scandinavian licorice in general, and started looking into it. And they have, you know, regionally they have a sort of fantastic tradition of it, and it just sort of got me thinking about like over the years, especially in the past like 5 or 10, I have, you know, had so many types of candy that are really fantastic, whether it's Japanese Kit Kats or Haichu or all of these other things that are just sort of like really interesting and really such a treat to happen upon and to try. And it seems that they're more available than ever. So I wanted to sort of test that hypothesis, and it turns out they are.
Yeah, you dug into this. Now, you know, maybe there was a Japanese candy that was popular with Japanese immigrants, and they could go to a local grocery store that imported straight from Japan. That's been around for a long time. You found, it sounds like, a lot of these candies are just finding their way out of just that one community and finding more and more widespread appeal. What's going on?
Right. For a long time, if you wanted a candy that you had, had as a kid growing up in a different country, or that you had purchased on vacation and enjoyed or something like that, you had to go to a specialty store. If it was British, maybe your grocery store would have it in the import foods aisle. Cadbury and things like that are sometimes available in those spots, but you were sort of out of luck otherwise. And what happened, I think that the Japanese brand Haichu was sort of a leader in this, in sort of like scoping out the market for US market share potentially. And they sort of realized that beyond their sort of existing market in cities with large Asian populations, a lot of other people could potentially like the candy that they sell. And they realized that because Salt Lake City was one of their strongest markets. And Salt Lake City does not have a very large Asian population, but what it has is a large population of people who have lived overseas for a couple of years because of LDS missions in the Mormon Church. So they realized that it was largely white people who were buying their candy after encountering it in Asia and really loving it. So that was sort of proof of concept for them, that they could market their products more widely and find people who would be interested in it. The thing with them is that Haichu, as you might expect, is extremely chewy. And texturally, there was sort of a question about whether people who didn't grow up with that texture would adopt it as adults. And it turns out, yes. So what they did sort of fascinatingly is start distributing cases of Haichu for free to Japanese baseball players. And because they didn't really have any way into the market other than that. Candy shelves are very much already spoken for by the sort of American giants like Hershey and Mars and Nestle, which is an international company but sells a lot in the United States. So they didn't really have a way to get people to stock their candy outside of these Asian markets that they already sold in. So they sent it to Japanese baseball players who then, you know, handed it out to their teammates. In baseball, you spend a lot of time looking very closely at players who are eating things and chewing on things. Eventually, you know, baseball beat writers found out that there was this candy that suddenly all of the entire roster was addicted to, and you could see it on TV. So they got some press that way, and things sort of exploded from there. And a lot of international candy uptake is sort of in that model, not necessarily as sort of shrewd as Haichu's manufacturers approached it, but a lot of it is word of mouth. People going on vacation, bringing it home. Candy makes a really easy thing to bring back to friends and family when you travel abroad, and sort of just passing it out and or going overseas themselves and trying it. And then with the sort of robustness of internet shopping as we have it now, it's a lot easier to find things that you might otherwise not be able to find. So you get an opportunity to try things, and you get an opportunity for these brands to demonstrate to potential retailers that they have a real audience.
We're talking to Amanda Mall, staff writer at The Atlantic, where she recently wrote about international candy, why it can open up our sweet treat horizons, and we're seeing it more and more around the United States. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered candy from another land? Did you like it and want to bring it back home? Or was it strange and off-putting to you? Are you from somewhere outside of the United States? Do you have a favorite candy from your home country that you love? You love to eat whenever you can get your hands on it. Share it with your friends. Tell us all about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that candy conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about international candy. Amanda Mull is with us, staff writer for The Atlantic. She says in some cases it can be better than American sweets. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience of your own to share, that's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Heather is with us in Madison. Heather, hi.
Hi there. I am calling because I actually have a subscription to some treats that are international, and we got a box a while ago that had these. They are rhubarb custard bonbons, so they're little round, actually not very round, bone marble size, and they have a mixture of rhubarb and this custard flavor, and they're chewy, kind of like a Haichu or a Starburst or something like that, and I find them very delightful just because rhubarb is not something that we normally have in candy here.
And Heather, you cut out for just a sec. Where are these rhubarb bonbons from?
England.
England. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And Amanda, Heather says, you know, you don't usually see this particular flavor, rhubarb, in candies. That's something you found a lot. There are flavors and textures that are just off the radar in the American candy counter.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is one of the key reasons that international candy has found so many sort of eager adherents in the United States. When you look at industrially produced candy in the U.S., you get these very large companies making things that are distributed everywhere, in every region, in every market. So you get candy that tends to be made to sort of appeal to as many people as possible. And that makes it great candy. You know, I wouldn't argue that the candy in the United States isn't good, but it does make it sort of bland and sort of, it tends to be a little bit sweet, maybe sweeter than some varieties overseas. And it doesn't have necessarily as many interesting flavors mixed in. Whereas overseas, you're looking at mostly countries that are not as quite as diverse as the United States. And whether that means ethnically diverse or just diverse as far as food culture region to region, what you get is companies that are able to sort of tailor their products to a more specific audience that has more specific tastes than perhaps trying to sell candy to the entire population of the United States. So you get more interesting fruits, you get more interesting flavor combinations, you get savory and sweet mixed together, you get candy that's spicy, you get candy that includes fruit flavors that just don't exist in the United States because we don't have those fruits here. So you get this sort of range of flavors that is not as available in like the average American grocery store or the average American drugstore where you might pick up, you know, candy at the checkout counter. And that can be really fun. You know, international food has grown a lot in the United States as far as like interest. And it's just interesting to taste things from other places and, you know, taste what people think of when they think of candy.
Thanks a lot for that call and sharing the rhubarb bonbons. Now, you mentioned earlier, Amanda, baseball players being influencers. There are also a lot of social media people evidently getting into these candies. I want to give a listen to one of them. This is Michelle Brown, also known as Miss Bedhead, followed by about 500,000 people on TikTok.
Honestly, Japanese candy is so, like, creative. I love it. Okay, last thing I'm going to try in this part is this Kit Kat. I'm assuming that it's like a whole grain one. All right, let's see what this looks like. Oh, it's kind of melted. Okay, this is supposed to look like a regular Kit Kat, but it melted, but it's probably still going to taste the same, so cheers.
All right, internet influencers on board here, but I want to get into those Kit Kats. Now, a Kit Kat we might see on a counter in another country, maybe flavors we've never seen before in the United States.
Right. A lot of foreign candy is not necessarily candy made by companies that don't exist in the United States, but because so much of the US market is served by these like very large multinational corporations, you get companies that are familiar to Americans, but that are making just completely different things overseas for different international audiences. So a great example is the Kit Kats from that clip. And these are a type of candy that got a lot of interest very early in the US. Before we have seen this like very, very recent boom with TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. And they come in these sort of like wonderful flavors, matcha, strawberry cheesecake, orange chocolate, things that just do not, you know, end up in the aisle of Walmart and Target in the US. But if you can find a Japanese grocery store or if you order them on the internet, you have access to this enormous array of flavors in this sort of very familiar form factor. And it's like falling through a hole into a dimension of candy that you didn't realize existed, which is just fun. And it's pretty inexpensive to have that kind of fun.
Before we wrap up, Amanda, you mentioned the Finnish licorice. Do you have another favorite that you've encountered in your extensive research?
I really like the pistachio flavored Japanese Kit Kats. I really, really enjoy high chews of pretty much any flavor. And those are pretty widely available now. You can get them at Walgreens and CVS. Yeah, I think that those are my three big favorites.
Amanda, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Amanda Mull. Amanda covers health for The Atlantic and writes the column Material World on consumerism in the United States. She talked to us about her piece on international candy, why she says it's worth trying out. Coming up, from sweet food to healthy stuff, we'll check out the USDA's new proposed nutrition standards for school meals and what they could mean for kids' health. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Susanna Michael joins me now, and we're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your Wisconsin Public Radio listening.
And that's because listener support makes up the largest slice of the funding for the programs you count on, programs like Central Time. And that's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
35 more minutes left in this hour, and we're looking for 8 more people to join in. Thank you so much. If you've already given.
Yes, thank you, thank you. And if you have not already given, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
In that last conversation, we learned about the candies of the world, more and more of them available, we learned, here in the United States. Sometimes, you know, we look at the top serious news stories of the day in Wisconsin and around the world. And sometimes we have some fun and look at things in our culture. We open our eyes to, some unfamiliar foods from around the world. It's the kind of variety of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
Right. I love that variety. So fun or serious, or fun and serious. WPR is listener supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888 888- 202 2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Just choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
A great way to support Wisconsin Public Radio is by becoming a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
And many people give $10 or $20 a month, but you choose whatever amount is right for you. The important thing is to become a sustainer right now during this drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, the beauty thing about giving to WPR is that it's always accessible. It's always a great value. You can't say that for everything you spend your hard-earned money on.
No, definitely not. And you get to choose how much you pay for your WPR listening. And you know that you'll tune in day after day, week after week, and get a great return on that investment. So give now. It is so worth it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a dollar a day or more on things that are part of your routine, the cups of coffee or your favorite snack.
And your WPR listening is part of your routine as well. And so maybe giving a dollar a day, that's $30 a month, is just the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy.
Looking for 8 more gifts by the end of this hour to meet our goal. WPR is listener powered. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a big deal.
And you can show off your WPR, your support for WPR programs when you ask for our new WPR t-shirt today. It has bold lettering. It's a navy t-shirt and it features the message informed, inspired, connected. That is you as a WPR listener. So ask for your t-shirt when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And let's take that another step, that $12 a month donation. You can make it for $12 a month and become a sustainer. So then you just set it up. It takes just a few minutes, so it'll come out of your bank account or your credit card. Then you know your support for Wisconsin Public Radio is always current. You can go in and change it up, down, whatever you want, whenever you want. It's a great time to become a sustainer and grab that new t-shirt with a gift of $12 a month or more online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. The t-shirt is great, but of course you're mainly giving because you count on us for great conversations and we count on you to help pay for it. Make your very important gift right now in an amount that works for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Up next, we'll talk to an expert on school lunch programs about proposed nutrition standards from the USDA. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Susanna Michaels is with me. The largest source of funding for WPR programs is listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. Take that super important step when you give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And when 8 more people join in during the next 25 minutes, we will meet this hour's goal. And these hourly goals are set up to make sure that we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to the Ideas Network. You're tuned in to events and trends around you. You want to know what's going on in the news and in the culture, and we are right there with you exploring all the stuff here on Central Time.
Yeah, Central Time has a real Wisconsin focus, connecting you with guests from around the state and the issues that affect your life. And listener support makes all the stories you hear on Central Time possible. So join in with your gift now. It really makes a big difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much for spending time with Wisconsin Public Radio today. Whether you found us by flipping through the dial or a friend recommended the high-quality news, great conversations, the weekend programs, you're still tuned in because you like what you hear.
And because you like what you hear, help pay for your WPR listening. You choose the amount. Maybe it's $100, or better yet, maybe it's $10 a month as a sustainer. Whatever amount is right for you is a great starting point. So become our next new donor with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing. You'll be entered to win $250 to spend at your favorite technology store when you make a gift of any amount for the programs you love. You'll have three chances to win. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the rules at WPR.org/drawing. Enter to win with your gift now. Here's how.
Make that gift, get entered in that drawing online at WPR.org or make a quick call to 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels on the Winter Member Drive. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible really thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, makes a big difference for our entire community.
And maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like, yes, I donated. Well, it's your continued support that makes the essential news and the interesting conversations and the cultural content on WPR possible today and into the future.
If it's been a while since you donated, this is a great time to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we'd be really glad to have you back on the team.
And say you heard three things a day that you're really glad you heard on WPR. I know I already have today for sure. And if you paid a dime for each one of them, that would work out to a gift of $10 a month. So make that gift right now, $10 a month, or whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hoping to hit our goal this hour. You know, sometimes this is the middle of this drive, Susanna, things slow down a little bit. I get worried that we're not going to hit our goals, and everybody tells me, calm down, Rob. It's okay, but I get worried. Yeah. We need to pick up the pace a little bit if we're going to hit our goal and get eight more gifts by the end of the hour. I'm not really that worried.
You're a little worried.
I'm a little worried.
You are.
But I'm not that worried. But you can help, and it's not about me. It's about Wisconsin Public Radio. These goals are there really to make sure that we end up with enough money to keep doing the shows that you like to listen to. You can help us do that with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And so many incentives for you to make a gift. And one, number one is the programming. And number two, we do have a drawing going on today. Three lucky people will win $250 to spend at their favorite technology store. Now, technically, no contribution is necessary. And you can see all those rules at WPR.org/drawing. But better yet, you are automatically entered when you make a gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And sustainers who make ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. You are automatically entered.
Thank you so much. If you are a sustainer, if you're not, become one right now. It's super easy to set up those monthly donations for your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You provide ongoing support then for all the programs you love, and you get entered into these kind of drawings that Susanna was just talking about.
Yep. We heard from Michelle in Marshfield who says, I listen to WPR every day. Contributing to a service I use daily and love is the right thing to do. Thank you so much, Michelle. It is a great thing to do, the right thing to do. And you can join Michelle with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been around over 100 years in large part thanks to people just like you who voluntarily donated some money to keep it going. That's fantastic. It's amazing to me. Thank you so much to everybody who's ever given. You can join them now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of Agriculture proposed new nutrition standards for the meals served at schools. The proposal aims to reduce the amount of sugar and sodium in school meals while emphasizing whole grains and domestically produced foods. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said the health and nutrition of the nation's youth can have wide-ranging impacts.
It's a healthcare imperative for our children. It's an equity issue. It's an educational achievement issue, and it's certainly an economic competitiveness issue, because if youngsters are not able to learn at the rate that they need to learn because of a variety of circumstances, we're just not going to be as competitive as we need to be.
If they're implemented, the changes would be phased in starting in 2024, fully put into place by 2029. Some school groups have raised concerns about how well they could keep up with these standards as meal programs continue to struggle with high food costs, labor shortages, and supply chain issues. Andrew Ruiz is Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic and Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research and a fellow in the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at UW-Madison. He's the author of the book Eating to Learn, Learning to Eat, The Origins of School Lunch in the United States. I talked to him last week. Andrew, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Starting with these new recommendations, what do you see as the most important things that would change here if these end up being approved?
So one of the biggest ones is actually the milk recommendation, where essentially the new regulation, at least as I understand it, would ban flavored milks. So like the chocolate milk in particular, or strawberry milks, things like that. And the milk would still have to adhere to the added sugars standard as well. And I imagine that would also be the rule that would get the most pushback in many ways, because not only are flavored milks very popular with children, but they're big money makers for the milk industry as well. Other, you know, big changes would be the whole grains requirement, where there's a current 80% standard, and that moving to 100% standards, 100% whole grain rich foods for breakfast and lunch. You know, a lot of the other adjustments, I think, are relatively similar to what we're seeing now. Though the requirement for a meat or meat alternative at breakfast is a pretty big one, pretty big change, and certainly some other adjustments. You know, the added sugar one is also a really big one, where there's currently no requirement limiting added sugars, and the new version would limit added sugars to fewer than 10% of calories in a meal. So they're fairly substantial changes over current practice.
How often do we see the USDA tackle these school nutrition guidelines?
Well, so it really depends. In theory, every 5 years, Congress is supposed to do the child nutrition reauthorization process. Currently, it's been almost 13 years since the last one. But at any time, the USDA can implement changes to nutrition requirements based on changes in research or policy. And in fact, we saw that happen. Many of the restrictions and requirements that were put in place during the Obama administration, after President Trump took office, many of those were repealed by the USDA, and then many of them were put back into place, when President Biden came into office. And so the requirements themselves can be changed pretty much at any time at the USDA's discretion, but also congressional action can also influence those guidelines as well.
And it's kind of weird. You think of this humble thing, like what goes on the tray in the school lunchroom, and then these changes come and there's this huge intersection of nutrition and politics and agricultural economics and lobbying. These end up being a huge political debate, right?
Absolutely. And food is always political, even outside the classroom or the lunchroom. But the main issue here, I think, is that, schools are always having to respond to these kinds of changes. So even when the changes are things that are very positive, like many of these proposed changes are now in terms of how they would impact, student diet and nutrition, it's also a lot of work for schools to update, their practices when new guidelines come out. And given all of the challenges with supply chains, particularly in food and agriculture right now, it can be a pretty big lift for schools to adjust. And so that's why a lot of times these changes are phased in over relatively long timeframes. But that also then makes them even more vulnerable to political changes. That time frame might be long enough that the recommendations will change before they even fully go into effect.
I know one concern is, well, I'll say as a parent, when I still had kids in the house, I sometimes tried to make similar replacements, more whole grains in pasta and things like that, less sugar and less salt. Sometimes it worked, and sometimes it just meant that food didn't get eaten. Is there a concern that, great, we're putting really healthy food on trays for kids, and then it's going into the garbage on their way back to class?
Yeah, and this is always a concern for schools, because the lunch program is only as useful as the food that kids eat, not the food that they're served. But there's pretty compelling research, and research that's been accumulating for a very long time, that consumption of food actually in many cases goes up, and participation rates in the program go up with higher nutrition standards. And there's even evidence that that kids' dietary patterns outside of school change as a result of the kinds of foods that they're served in school. And so there's not only real potential to affect kids' health and nutrition by improving school meal nutrition standards, but there's also a lot of good evidence that that improving nutrition and increasing the nutritional requirements doesn't actually negatively impact consumption, at least at the population level.
Talking to Andrew Ruiz with the Wisconsin Center for Education Research, author of the book Eating to Learn, Learning to Eat, The Origins of the School Lunch in the United States. Andrew, I want to take a longer view. You look at, as your book title says, how we got started with school lunches. It wasn't always a given that a school would provide a lunch. Where were some of the first experiments with providing lunch to kids in schools?
Sure. In the United States, school lunch programs start in the late 19th century, early 20th century, and mostly in large industrializing cities. And they're really a response to major changes in life that took place as a result of industrialization and urbanization. More and more kids were entering the school system because more and more states were passing compulsory education laws. And what schools were finding is that many of the kids that were coming into school were badly malnourished and were not getting enough food outside of school, were not getting enough nutritious food outside of school. And so the early school lunch programs were really a direct response to the observation of all of these hungry and malnourished children that were coming into school, and were a way to address that problem, not only as a sort of humanitarian issue, but also as an educational one, that students who were undernourished or poorly nourished didn't learn very well, and they had behavioral challenges and all sorts of other things. And so it was really a direct response to sort of real problems and how society was changing.
Well, with over a century of work and I guess research on this, do we see an impact of these school lunch and in some cases breakfast programs? Does feeding kids help them learn better?
Absolutely. Research is pretty compelling that, high quality, nutritious meals, particularly when they're made available free of charge or at very low cost, have tremendous impacts on students. It has an impact on education, a positive impact on education, has a positive impact on health. There's even some evidence it might have a positive impact on reducing obesity. There's even some evidence that it might affect future earning potential. But there's very, very strong evidence sort of across the board that school meals have positive impacts on children.
As we see some back and forth now over pandemic school lunch programs, whether they'll continue to be funded and work the same into the future, I hear from callers sometimes kind of a core debate, like, yes, as a society, we need to feed these kids so they're learning in schools. Versus, well, hold on, it's the parents' responsibility to feed the kids in the way that they think is appropriate for them. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that these are not brand spanking new debates.
No, these are sort of the core questions that people ask, not only in school meal programs, but really in any social welfare or public health program. The core question is always, how do we balance responsibility between, the state and the individual? And, one of the things that's really important when it comes to school meals to remember is that, kids don't have a choice about going to school. Like, they're required to go to school for some number of years. And, if we really want to ensure that, kids who grow up in this country are healthy, are able to take advantage of free public education, and are able to fully participate in a democratic society, we need to make sure that they are well fed. And so the debate is really about, to what extent does the state bear that responsibility, and to what extent do individuals, meaning the parents in this case, bear that responsibility.
Getting back to these USDA proposed guidelines, they're not a done deal, they're proposals. What are you watching for now as parents and schools and industry groups respond to these guidelines?
Yeah, so I'd be very curious to see how the industry response looks, particularly as I mentioned earlier on the proposed milk requirements. Certainly, the added sugar and saturated fat and sodium requirements will likely draw some pushback. So I'd be very curious to see how that happens. Certainly, the School Nutrition Association, which represents food service workers, will likely weigh in on these requirements as well. And so it'll be interesting to see what that response is, because I think this is a case where most parents will likely, be happy with these changes. Again, most evidence shows that the students themselves will be fine with these changes. Schools will obviously have to adapt to them, but schools, when the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act was passed a little over a decade ago and went into effect, most schools were able to meet the much stricter nutrition standards. Overwhelmingly, the majority of schools were able to meet them, and they found that it worked well for their lunch programs. So, again, there are bigger supply chain issues right now than there were a decade ago, but I think most schools will see these as meetable. It'll be really a question of how much pushback there is from the interests that represent various food industry and the sort of industry that's grown up around supplying schools with foods that meet federal nutrition requirements.
Andrew, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Ruiz is Associate Director for Research in the Epistemic Analytics Lab at the Wisconsin Center for Education Research. He's the author of the book Eating to Learn, Learning to Eat, The Origins of School Lunch in the United States. He was with us for a look at new USDA proposed nutrition standards for school meals. Now, Susanna Michaels joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, just like Central Time. Support from people like you is the biggest piece of funding for all your favorite WPR programs. That's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And we have just a few minutes left this hour, and we are looking for your gift. That's the only one we want, yours. So make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener powered. That means your gift right now really does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in the last segment, we learned about proposed changes to the nutrition guidelines for school lunches. What blows my mind about this topic is that it is always under discussion and there is always something to say. And what I appreciated is that we got a Wisconsin expert on this topic here on Central Time. And these are the kinds of conversations and guests you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes that conversation. Conversation, all the great topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And you can also choose our 2023 USA Made WPR t-shirt. It's a navy shirt and it shows this simple message: informed, inspired, connected. Display your dedication for WPR programs when you wear your new shirt, and that's with a gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Andreka, and I live in Madison. I decided to become a sustainer because instead of writing that one check every year, I thought, I don't want to have to worry, did I remember to do it? How much did I give before? Just set it up and let it flow and know that it's happening. I feel much better knowing that without my being able to screw up, WPR is getting that support regularly.
Consider becoming a sustainer with a regular monthly gift. Visit WPR.org to get started now.
Become a sustainer at WPR.org. You can also do it with a quick phone call at 888-202-2552. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you count on. That's why your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really makes a big difference.
And it is whatever amount you choose. That is the cool thing, that when you make a voluntary donation, you get to decide how much to give. WPR is listener supported, and that means the more donors we have, the more secure our funding. So how much you give isn't as important as the fact that you do give.
A lot of first-time donors will give maybe $100, or they'll go with $10 monthly, but you decide the amount that's right for you. Since giving is your choice, and because WPR is something you value, you're going to find out that donating feels good. Find out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, I know Rob and I are big visitors to the vending machines. We both know that it's easy to spend a dollar or more a day on things that are part of your routine, like a cup of coffee or that favorite snack.
Consider the news, info, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a dollar a day, $30 a month is just the right donation for you to keep that habit up. Sign up right now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. When you do, you're going to support the programs that you enjoy every day. Just a minute or so left in this hour. Still looking for your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Now, Susanna, we got this this T-shirt.
Yes,
right?
The T-shirt.
Tell me about this T-shirt.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's USA made, and it's printed right here in Wisconsin, and it's available to you when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard from Stephanie in Oconto who says, I appreciate WPR more than I can say. I realized I was taking it for granted and wanted to do my part. Thank you so much, Stephanie. And you did say it. You did say it. You appreciate WPR and understand that your support makes it possible. So join in with your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Join the Central Time team. Give now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.